Well, my notes tell me we have Port Washington. Nope, we have Eastbrook Academy High School and Madison Community Montessori with us. If you all are here, would you please stand? Wow, that's a big group. Okay, so how about if Eastbrook sits down so I can see what's Madison Community? Okay, great. Very nice. Thank you very much. Please be seated. Well, these two groups of students are with us on a program called Court with Class, so they know a little bit about the case that you're going to argue today. If you all can stay as soon as this argument is over, I will come down and we'll chat a little bit about how cases get to the Supreme Court and what happens once they're here, what happens before they get here, and hopefully answer some questions. We won't talk about the substance at all of the argument that you will hear, but there are a lot of interesting things that we can discuss together. So if you can stay as soon as the argument is over, please do, and then I'll just come down and join you. And if you have fallen asleep during the argument, oh my, how could that ever happen? I will be sure to wake you up before we begin.
Have two glasses of wine, maybe. Beforehand.
I have seen students totally fall asleep during argument. I mean, to the point that they were lucky they didn't snore. And then when I come out, I always do something to wake them up, so better be careful. Okay, our second case of the day, the Yacht Club at Sister Bay versus the Village of Sister Bay. Counsel, it appears you are prepared to proceed.
I am, Your Honor.
Okay, please do.
Good morning, Your Honors, clerks, court personnel, and students, future lawyers, and judges and justices of the Supreme Court. May it please the court. My name is John Tufnell. I represent the petitioner and the plaintiff in this case, the Yacht Club at Sister Bay Condominium Association. I'll refer to my client today as the association. The issue before the court today in this case is whether in a repetitive nuisance situation involving the government, a party must file notice of claim within 120 days of the first time the nuisance occurs, or forever lose rights to relief for all later nuisances of the same nature. The association respectfully requests this court answer that question, no. The association asserts it must be able to follow the statutory protocol and file a new notice of claim each time a new nuisance event occurs. This court should reverse the Court of Appeals on this issue and remand with instructions consistent with the reversal. The particular nuisance in this case involves noise and the Village of Sister Bay's operation of a performance pavilion featuring amplified concerts at a lakeside park. The implication of the holding in the Court of Appeals applies equally, however, to any nuisance conduct alleged against the government. It doesn't have to just be a noise nuisance. It could be nuisance based on odors or smoke or soot or water or sewage. It could be any nuisance at all that potentially the holding in this case applies to. So it's an important issue for all Wisconsin citizens because we're all subject to jurisdiction of many different layers of government. It could be non-state actors such as sewage districts. We've seen that several times in cases here in the recent past. It could be school districts. It could be villages or towns.
But it applies differently to government and non-government.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
They make claims differently against a government or a non-government?
Yes, that's correct. If the that's the notice of claim statute itself, if it applies, the holding in the application of the holding in the easy roll-off case could potentially limit significantly the types of actions and the numbers of actions and who may pursue relief against any government actor.
Isn't there a middle ground in this case? The application of the continuing nuisance doctrine as you advance, or the rejection of it, I think, is embraced by the Court of Appeals. sometimes I say, isn't there a Goldilocks answer, one that is in the middle and just right?
Your Honor, if you could find the Goldilocks in this case, you would be surprised.
Let me turn to your opposing counsel's brief on page 17. And in the second paragraph on page 17, they take you to task, heavens forbid, but they take you to task for saying at the beginning of that paragraph, do you have that in front of you? I don't want to proceed without you having it in front of you. You do?
I do have it in front of me, Your Honor.
And Yacht Club does not offer the court a principled way to address the variety of nuisance actions and whether some or all override the notice of claim statute. In the following part of that paragraph and on to the next page, they give some situations that are, I think they talk about continuous, ongoing, or daily exposure that suggests maybe the continuing nuisance doctrine may apply. I know one of the cases cited on the following page is I didn't read the case, but it is it's referenced as a roller skating rink next to a hotel. I can only imagine that that might be a little noisy. Maybe not at the inception when the enterprise is brand new and maybe not as robust as it is 6 months or 12 months down the road. But at any rate, when I get back to the middle ground, it seems like in certain situations they're indicating that the continuous nuisance doctrine might apply, but certainly not here. So tell me why it applies here.
Yes, Your Honor, and let me start my answer with getting back to some of the terminology, because I think part of the when we as practitioners in the state of Wisconsin advising our clients look at the nuisance law and the way that it's developed over the many years, the common law that where we have that progression through the case law through the years, there are many different kinds of nuisances, and this court has made distinctions between types of nuisances. For example, we have a distinction between what's called a private nuisance versus a public nuisance. Okay, that's a distinction that we know from our case law. We also have a distinction between an intentional nuisance and an unintentional nuisance. We also have a distinction between a continuing nuisance and a permanent nuisance. Okay, so there's three examples right there of the way that the court has tried to divide and categorize certain nuisance situations in order to address the claims that are before it. And to respond to your question about where the middle ground here is, I think it's an easy answer to the first part of the question, where you cited the language on page 17 at the top of that first full paragraph, where a principled way to address the variety of nuisance actions and whether some or all override the notice of claim statute. Well, I'm not here today to suggest that the court should override anything to do with the statute. I think the statute is perfectly fine the way it is. What my problem is with what the Court of Appeals did here was that it applied the statute in a way that is contrary to the way that black letter law, nuisance law, works in the state of Wisconsin.
Aren't you advancing that the continuing nuisance doctrine is an exception to 893-81A?
I'm not asserting that at all, Your Honor.
Okay.
In fact, I would like the opportunity to be able to go back into circuit court and seek relief for events that occurred after 2014. The way that the case is situated.
So give me your, let's go back to that first sentence that we were just reading on page 17. Give me your principled, and I'm going to ask the opposing counsel too, because they take you to task for not giving the principled explanation, and I'm going to ask them for it too. A principled way to address the variety of nuisance actions and whether some or all override the notice of claim statute. That's your task.
Right. And so I would say no nuisance overrides the notice of claim statute. Any time that there is a nuisance claim against a governmental entity, the party that is aggrieved by the nuisance conduct ought to satisfy the statute prior to bringing suit. That would be my principled first position.
That is that each concert then is a new nuisance, a new event giving rise to a claim. That's what you're advancing.
That is exactly what I'm advancing, Your Honor. That each concert, because of the nature of a noise nuisance, with the different sound, the different frequency, the different atmospheric conditions, could potentially be a nuisance, or it might not be a nuisance.
But I hope it's not a matter of semantics, but I really think that argument suggests that because it is a continuing nuisance, if whatever it is, that the 120-day requirement, with its purposes and policies behind it, is established and set forth in our case law, really has no traction. You know, every day you could, every concert you could make a claim, couldn't you?
Well, potentially yes, but you wouldn't make a claim if the village simply turned the sound down. That would be a principled way to address a problem where one person's use of their property is interfering with the quiet enjoyment of your neighbor's property.
Sure. I mean, I read this case and I thought to myself, how did we get here? I mean, here we are in a motion to dismiss, not a summary judgment motion. We don't have development of facts. The Court of Appeals remands because the determinations are quintessential factual on the remand. And how did we get here? You say, oh, you know, lots of noise. Your opposing counsel says, oh, you're characterizing it like a heavy metal. And I think they're trying to say it's really Joan Baez showing up every once in a while on Wednesdays from 6 to 9 for 2 months. You know, there's such a disparate approach to the facts, but of course, we're not there. We're on a motion to dismiss.
That's correct, Your Honor. So the facts that we have before us are those that are listed in the complaint. And, I mean, what I see is, I call it my easy roll-off problem. If I can't get rid of the easy roll-off problem, this case likely doesn't go anywhere, even on remand, because I'm stuck with trying to argue, develop facts about concerts that happened in August of 2014. That's 5 years ago now.
Why don't you just bring a preliminary injunction for future concerts?
There are quite a few tactics that I think would be appropriate once we get past the issues that have arisen on the motion to dismiss and on appeal.
Well, I look, yeah, and there are so many issues once it goes back that have to be addressed, not just the factual ones I indicated, but the standing issues and all sorts of issues. One of the concerns I have is why don't you plead negligence here, and then you have under 1P a one-year discovery window, don't you?
Yes, and I believe, Your Honor, that negligence was pled.
Well, then why aren't we arguing about that? 1A doesn't have any reference to discovery. It's a nuisance cause of action, as I understood the briefs and what we're focusing on. And yet 1P has a discovery clause that doesn't exist in 1A. And our jurisprudence is replete with the intersection between nuisance and, well, replete is an exaggeration. There's lots of cases that deal with the intersection of nuisance and negligence. You know, there's comparison of nuisance. We have cases, the Physicians Plus case, I said nuisance was, the majority wrote that nuisance was like negligence per se there. I mean, so why didn't you do that?
Well, I think the nature of the invasion in this case is clearly intentional, where the use and the operation of the performance pavilion is really what the association complains about. It's not the construction of the pavilion. That's not the problem. As it exists sitting there today, November 5th, 2018, with nobody playing a concert in it, it's not a nuisance. And so the idea of the negligent, what would it be, a negligent operation? It's really, it's an intentional act of the city allowing others, business interests and others, to use the pavilion and to amplify their sound to the extent that it bothers neighboring
One final,
owners.
I mean, what I'm concerned with is manipulation, and this case just gives all sorts of opportunity for manipulation. I mean, what you're responding to just goes right through my mind and comes back. Negligent supervision, negligent enforcement of the closing hours, negligent this. I mean, you can frame it in negligence just as easily as you can frame it in nuisance, it seems to me, but I may be wrong.
Well, it's I agree with you, Your Honor. The whole idea of nuisance is difficult sometimes to get your arms around, and that's why I think the particular facts in the case, in this case, a noise nuisance that is generated from the use and operation of a performance pavilion that is directed right at a residential community, that informs the court as to whether or not each one of these instances, a concert, either on an evening or, for example, this past Labor Day, it was a Saturday and Sunday all-day concert. And under the application of the Easy Roll-Off case, according to the Court of Appeals, nobody that has been bothered by a nuisance in the past 5 years that lives at the condominium association has a right to bring a claim because they had not acted on their right to bring a claim at a previous concert that bothered them. And to me, if we look at the purpose of the notice of claim statute and the actual language of that statute, it informs us that each one of those concerts, if it rises to the level of a significant invasion of a person's right to enjoy the quiet enjoyment of their own property, then that's a new nuisance according to our case law. And under the statute, with the notice of claim, that is the happening of an event giving rise to a claim. That, to me, those two pieces, nuisance law and the text of the notice of claim statute, fit very nicely together. And if the village wants to continue to operate its concerts at the level of sound that it does, then it should be subject to, potentially, a new notice of claim each time.
What about the purpose of 893.80 sub 1d sub a to afford governmental entities the opportunity to compromise and budget for potential settlement of litigation? If you could bring a new claim with every concert, wouldn't that go against those purposes?
I don't think so, Your Honor. The village in the operation of this pavilion, it's a very public event. They're in control of the bands that play there. They're in control of the hours that they play. They're in control of the loudness, the intensity of the sound. They know all of these things prior to even receiving a notice of claim. And if in fact the operation of the pavilion in a particular instance generated complaints rising to the level of a formal notice of claim, I think the city or the village in this case would have ample opportunity to investigate. I'm not sure what there would be to investigate. Maybe find out how loud was it, but the village already monitors the sound. They've got people out there. They're already checking this. So I don't think that part of the purpose of the notice of claim statute, I don't think there's a problem balancing the interests of the government versus the interests of the private property owners.
Well, the idea behind it, though, I mean, if you could specifically address budgeting for potential settlement or litigation, you're basically talking about being able to bring them to court, which is not a cheap process, for every single concert. I mean, there may be other costs involved as well. I know in your brief you kind of said, well, they don't have any costs, this is built, but I don't know how much they pay these musicians, and they do have this implication of being able to be dragged into court for each concert. So how do you reconcile those purposes with what you're stating?
Well, I think that's a potential issue for any defendant that is stubborn in his conduct that maintains a nuisance. Potentially, each time that they are invading the quiet enjoyment of someone else's property, that does create a new cause of action. However, I think the point about budgeting and looking out for the finances of a governmental entity, I suggest that the remedy here is cost-free if they would just turn the sound down.
You know, have there been attempts, I know you tried to work this out before we ended up in court, but have there been attempts to list what the village would do that would satisfy your clients so they could still have concerts but not have the types of noise, or perhaps for the, I think I read some of the concerts went into midnight and have certain hours. Have you a list of things that would satisfy your clients, and have they been presented?
Certain hours seems to have been satisfied. But to get to the heart of your question, 75 decibels at the property edge, that would be the ultimate satisfaction. That seems to be the reasonable level of sound leaving one's property that most municipalities, well, I won't say most, that some municipalities have adopted in terms of a formal noise ordinance that the city itself subjects itself to.
So
we don't have that in this case.
If this were to go back and the court were to suggest that the circuit court look at abatement, what you would be asking for really is not getting rid of the concerts, but that the decibel level be kept below 70.
That's correct, Your Honor. There's no desire on the part of the association to prevent the village from promoting tourism or to sponsor and host a gathering of people to come on a summer night in Door County. That's one of the things that is that is attractive about Door County itself. There are many of my the members of the association are condominium owners who are there only in the summertime because it's beautiful up there. So those types of give and take, obviously, that's part of settlement and part of negotiations. But it also would inform the court if we got to the point of the court having to issue a remedy for a finding of a nuisance. That would be one of the things that certainly would be on the table.
Counsel, let's say we agree with you that each nuisance-causing concert starts a new 120-day notice of injury period. Have you complied with that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Right. So let's say we agree with you that each nuisance-causing concert starts a new 120-day period within which to file notice of injury. Have you done that?
Have I done that to date? For this particular plaintiff, no. However, the recent Labor Day concert from 2018 is still well within the 120-day period, and those discussions are being had by the board. Now, I'll answer the question in an alternative way as this. There are two individual condominium owners who have filed their own lawsuit against the village for equitable relief for abatement of the nuisance based on notices of claim that they gave back in 2017.
Notices of injury or notices of claim?
Both, Your Honor.
Okay.
There was no problem with the prerequisites to filing suit in that second case.
Mr. Tufnell, I've got a question for you about the scope of the claim that you've brought to us, because you made a statement in your reply brief that the association does not seek to apply the notice of claim statute to old claims. It wants the right to seek redress for noise nuisances from 2017 and any potential nuisances, or at this stage, actual, in 2018. Are you still advancing the existing claims and the existing complaint that date back to, I think, 2014 and 2015?
Depends, Your Honor. If I can't get rid of my easy roll-off problem, then that's what I'll do. If I do get rid of my easy roll-off problem, it's likely that the current complaint goes away and a new complaint takes its place, because now we're talking about concerts and facts that are more recent in time that are, frankly, more relevant to whether or not there is an existing nuisance.
I don't want to suggest that your clients don't care about the past nuisances, but the toothpaste is out of the tube. They were already under the complaint disturbed, so your issue before this court is more forward-looking. Is that a fair way of saying it?
It's absolutely right, Your Honor. The primary remedy that the association seeks is equitable, and it's forward-looking. And that's really the, if you look at the nature of the invasion in a nuisance case like this, where it's noise, and there isn't the type of structural damage that we saw in Bosco or the Sunnyside case with the mill that collapsed. Where we have a noise nuisance violation, it's the disturbance of the quiet enjoyment of one's property. And it really, the anxiety comes from the fact of knowing that it's going to happen again, potentially.
Counsel,
and that there's no way to stop it.
Where in your complaint, or let me just, or any notice of injury, have you asserted this future right that you are advancing now? Paragraph 19 of the Court of Appeals opinion says we can dispose of this case in a couple of ways. And they look at the notice of injury attached to the association's complaint, and it asserted the last use of the pavilion occurred on or about September 1, 2015. Even assuming the concert on that date constituted a new event for purposes of this statute, the association would have been required to serve a notice of injury regarding that concert by December 30, 2015. It wasn't served until March of 2016. Therefore, you're untimely with respect to what's in your notice of injury.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's a problem for the association. I acknowledge that. I think it came from the timing of trying to stop a concert series at that point, coming in the summer of 2016. Given the fact that the government has 6 months to wait on a notice of claim as to act, they could have just buried it, and the whole 2016 concert series would have come and gone without any ability to stop it. Now, we're 2 years past that now. But to address your question on that, the notice of injury part has an exception to it, and that's the actual notice. And we believe the facts will show that the village had ample actual notice of the complaints by the members of the condominium association as to the operation of that pavilion for those several weeks in 2014 that it was open.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Remzi Batar, Municipal Law and Litigation Group in Waukesha, on behalf of the Village of Sister Bay. Pleased to be here this morning. I would like to begin, before I answer Justice Bradley's question about a middle ground, with, I think, a accurate point of law about nuisance. It's from the MMSD decision of several years ago. There is perhaps no more impenetrable jungle in the entire area than that which surrounds the word nuisance. It has meant all things to all people, and has been applied indiscriminately to everything from an alarming advertisement to a cockroach in a baked pie. What the Yacht Club is trying to do here is take this entire body of nuisance law, which some of its own cases call a slippery concept, that's the Sunnyside case, nuisances is a slippery term. They want to take that entire body of law and incorporate it right into the notice of claim statute. This court, and it's an aggressive theory. In their reply brief at page 4, they try to say that Easy Roll-Off plaintiff had an arrogant and aggressive theory of liability against the municipality. Well, that is precisely what we have here. I'm certainly not saying my esteemed counsel here is arrogant, but the theory being presented is certainly an arrogant and aggressive theory of liability against the municipality.
Why is it arrogant and aggressive to object to loud music pumped into your living room?
I agree there's been a lot of discussion this morning about the merits of the case. This matter is on up here on a procedural issue. It was remanded by the Court of Appeals.
I was only responding to your argument about the case being arrogant and aggressive.
Sure.
I know we're here about whether the notice of claim was sufficient.
Nonetheless, it is an aggressive theory, and let me explain why. The middle ground approach that was questioned is found in the legislative mandate of Section 893.80, subsection 1 itself. If there is a lack of compliance with the notice of claim statute, which is what we have here, and they admit it, then the exception in the legislative mandate is for actual notice and lack of prejudice. That is the exception that the legislature built in. There is an entire body of case law that discusses and analyzes what is actual notice and what is prejudice.
Counsel, you might be getting to this, but I'm actually interested in an answer to the Chief Justice's question. Is it that this is an aggressive approach because of the application of the statute that the Yacht Club advocates, or because they are seeking redress for a nuisance?
The latter, because they're claiming that every single time there's a concert, it gives them a new opportunity to label it a nuisance.
Well, let's set aside the notice of claim aspect of this for a moment. And let's say that, and I know that you dispute this as a factual matter, but let's say that concerts were being held late into the night and that it was so loud as to disturb the residents of the Yacht Club. Yeah? Is it aggressive for them to seek a remedy for that?
It is not aggressive for them to seek a remedy for that if they timely comply with the notice of claim statute.
Okay, and is it your position that they had to complain about the first concert that was a nuisance, and if they don't do that, they are forever barred from claiming a nuisance for the way that the village operates the band pavilion?
That is correct. For this particular claimant, this Yacht Club Association alleges that they were aware of the construction in 2014, and under the complaint, concerts immediately began.
Okay, but their complaint is not about the existence of the pavilion, is it?
It's not about the existence of the pavilion. It's about the concerts, which immediately began upon completion of the pavilion.
So did the 120-day period begin with the completion of construction or with the first band that was loud?
The first band that was loud, which would have been within the first month of the construction.
How do you I'm sorry, go ahead, Justin.
Thank you. So is it your position, is it the village's position, that having had one loud band and no claim within the 120 days, it is forever immunized from the loudest 24-hour-day bans thereafter?
We're not claiming that it is immunized. We're claiming that once they heard a loud band, and if they thought it was a nuisance, the legislative mandate required them to provide notice within a 120 days unless they can show actual notice and prejudice, which is what the Court of Appeals found and what we're remanded back to determine.
So now, against whom does this preclusive effect apply? Is it the current residents of the Yacht Club? Let's say someone new moves in. Could they bring a claim?
That's interesting, and I think we have footnoted and talked about that both in our opposition to the petition and in the merits brief before this court, that there is an issue of standing, whether this party is the proper party to prosecute this
yes,
or the individual condo owners. We don't know the answer to that because we're not back yet on the remand.
Well, I think you could answer this as a matter of law. I mean, you're the one that's advancing the preclusive effect of having not challenged the first concert. So is it the village's position that none of the current residents of the yacht club can thereafter challenge any concerts, but if a new owner comes in, that person could challenge a concert?
I certainly think that's fair if we had a new person who is not part of the condo association. I don't think I could stipulate today whether these particular condo owners would be forever barred or not until we have discovery, learn their ownership interests, learn who they are, learn how the condo association agreements work, and so forth. But if there is another neighbor next to the yacht club of Sturgeon Bay, a block away, let's call him Average Joe, and he's living there, if he doesn't like the concerts that occur next summer, he could bring a notice of claim so long as he's doing so within the legislative mandate of 120 days, or alternatively shows lack of prejudice and actual notice, which is what we've been remanded for here. The answer to the yacht club situation is, in fact, easy money. The facts here and the theories are really the same.
Well, can I stop you there? Because my question is, how can the village square its position with the Cull case? In Cull, the court said the continuance and every use of that which is in its erection and use a nuisance is a new nuisance for which the party injured has a remedy for his damages.
There's no doubt that Cull says that. That comment is one strand within nuisance law, and I think the response to that is those are concepts involving the interplay between nuisance and statute of limitations. The notice of claim statute is just that. It's a notice of claim. It's serving different purposes than a statute of limitation. The only case for which this court has reviewed the interplay between the notice of claim and statute of limitations is Colby, a case from years ago, which said that the notice of claim statute is a legislative mandate that cannot be easily overridden. And the court in that case determined that it was a statute of limitations plus 120 days to comply with the legislative mandate of 893.80. So I don't think you can easily, and that's precisely what the plaintiff is trying to do here, Justice Bradley. They're looking at this little case law strand in the Cull case and in Sunnyside that says every continuance of a nuisance is in law a new nuisance. And then in their complaint, they're just slapping the label that this is a continuing nuisance. And they're alleging that we get a new opportunity to file a claim every single day. It's not that easy. As I pointed out, I don't think this court should walk into those murky waters of nuisance and bring that whole body of law into the notice of claim statute.
Well, counsel, let's say that Cull is a small threat. To agree with you, would we need to overrule it?
I don't think you need to overrule Cull. You need to follow the ruling in Easy Roll-Off and what it had to say about the continuing violation doctrine.
Yeah, but Easy Roll-Off didn't deal with a continuing nuisance, correct?
It did not deal with a continuing nuisance.
Okay.
True. It dealt with allegations of unreasonable conduct under restraint of trade.
Right. We're not dealing with that here.
Well, the standards that govern liability in each case is very similar. In that case, it's the rule of reason that governs whether or not something is a restraint of trade based on the circumstances. A nuisance is really the same type of thing. Is this unreasonable conduct under the circumstances that interferes with somebody's property?
Well, but counsel, there may be some similarities between the two, but there is this small thread of cases headed by Cull that says, here's a thing about continuing nuisances. They are evergreen. Every time that occurs, that's a new nuisance. That's part of our nuisance law, yeah?
It absolutely is part of the nuisance law.
Okay.
I'm not saying that little part is wrong.
Okay,
the
so now, years later. Okay, well, hang on a second. I just wanted to lead you through this and so you can show me where I'm wrong. So we take that principle to this situation. We say, well, yacht club is alleging a continuing nuisance. And we know about continuing nuisances that there is a new nuisance each time it gets renewed, right? And so when we look at the notice of claim statute and we lay that against our continuing nuisance jurisprudence, we say, well, 120 days from the event, what's the event? It's the new nuisance. Why doesn't that work?
Well, even if we applied that methodology here, their lawsuit would still be barred. As the Court of Appeals, I think it was Justice Rogensack pointed out, the Court of Appeals in paragraph 19 looked at the complaint. The last alleged nuisance event is September 2015. The notice of claim doesn't come until February 2016. It was late, even if you adopt their theory and that type of methodology.
But that's really not why we're here. They want the opportunity to file complaints in the future for 2018, 19, 20, until it gets resolved.
That's correct. And they're wanting to do that based on a very novel theory that I think would directly undermine the findings and reasoning of this court in easy roll-off.
Okay, counsel, hang on. So I just wanted to turn you back to the question. I mean, you went off and talked about whether the notice of claim was timely. That wasn't my question. So my question is, given our continuing nuisance jurisprudence, and we lay that up against the notice of claim statute, and we say, well, what's the happening? The happening is the most recent concert. And can't you file a notice of claim within 120 days of that, or show that the village had actual knowledge? What doesn't work about that? Setting aside whether the notice of claim was timely, set that aside, why doesn't that analysis work?
It might work for some hypothetical plaintiff. It doesn't work for this claimant who knew about the concerts and they knew about their alleged harm. They knew about the actor who was causing the alleged harm as far back as the first concert in 2014.
Okay, so then wouldn't we need to conclude that when we're talking about a village engaged in a continuing nuisance, that our continuing nuisance jurisprudence doesn't apply? That is to say, there is no new nuisance each time it puts on a concert for villages and only for villages. Everybody else in the state of Wisconsin, the continuous nuisance rule applies, a new nuisance each time it occurs. But for villages, that's not true. Isn't that what we would have to do?
No, I think that the notice of claim statute would operate, regardless of the theory that this court employs, would operate similarly against or similarly for a town, village, county,
okay,
or the like.
Let's say governmental entities.
Governmental entities.
So your position is that for the rest of the state of Wisconsin, A continuing nuisance is a new nuisance every time it occurs, but not for governmental entities.
That would, the village's position here, and the position of many municipalities, would be that of easy roll-off, that the continuing violation doctrine does not allow for repeat, ongoing exposures for indefinite periods to a municipality. The claim must be brought timely within 120 days, or they can look through the common law exception that's built into the statute for actual notice and prejudice.
All right, but in easy roll-off, we didn't say that each time that there was a tipping fee charged, that there was a new injury. We didn't say that, did we?
Correct. The court did not say that.
Okay. But we do say in cases like Call that in a continuing nuisance, each nuisance is a new injury.
That is what Call says.
Okay.
But the easy roll-off case did not deal with nuisances.
I know, that's precisely my point. So what you're asking is that we take the easy roll-off and we supplant Call with easy roll-off for purposes of shielding governmental entities from cases that deal with continuing nuisances.
And the response to that is that Call is a case of that itself says we're relying upon ancient nuisance law. It's a case of 1920 or 1930. It's an old case.
1970.
Not
so old, counsel.
But I think if you look at the cases it's citing, if you're looking at the cases it's citing for that proposition of a continuing nuisance, it has taken you all the way back to 1930 and before. My point is that the legislature came in after Call in all those cases at a time where there was different notice of claim statutes around the state. There was an earlier version of the notice of claim statute that applied specifically by its terms to only torts. They modified the statute further, and it says for all causes of action or language to that effect. So the legislature has already made a decision through 893.80 that it applies certainly to all tort actions. The only exceptions that this court has ever recognized are where there's a conflict between a statutory framework, whether it's the open meetings law, the public records law, the statutory framework for annexations, the statutory framework for the public trust doctrine, and then you apply this three-factor test. That's the only
right.
occasion
but
where
we're not,
you
but,
have a threshold exception.
Right, but nobody's arguing for an exception here. Yacht Club acknowledges that the notice of claim statute applies.
They sure do.
Right? So we don't need to go down that line.
Correct.
What we need to do is find out whether we need to modify our continuing nuisance jurisprudence for the benefit of government entities. Right?
And I again, the village respectfully, and I think I speak on behalf of all municipalities, that we respectfully request that this court does not bring in wholesale this nuisance body of case law to create such an exposure to municipalities under the notice of claim.
But why, counsel? Why should we protect government entities who are engaging in continuing who are engaging in continuing nuisances? Why should we develop a doctrine, change our continuous nuisance jurisprudence for the purpose of protecting government agencies from their nuisances?
Because the legislature has said so. The legislature in 893.80 has created a different framework than for private parties. It has created a framework where there are caps, where there are immunities, where there's even a six-month limitations period to bring your lawsuit, and they've certainly created the notice of claim statute, which is what we have here today. And when you look at the reasoning in Easy Roll-Off in rejecting any type of concept of bringing in a continuing violation type theory.
But that's because the event giving rise to the claim was the party entering, the waste management company entering into the contract, right? I mean, it's a completely different situation, so I'm not really following your argument that we shouldn't apply nuisance law here. I mean, we have to give meaning to the event giving rise to the claim, so I don't hear the association advocating for an exception under 893.80. They're asking us to apply the language differently than you are.
The argument of, certainly there was a contract in Easy Roll-Off, yes, but the argument of the plaintiff, Easy Roll-Off, was that each time they paid more money than other competitors in a similar position was a new event. It was tipping fees. Every time we paid a new tipping fee is a new event, and they look to the continuing violation doctrine. We have the same argument here. Every time you hold a new concert, it is a new event, and we therefore get a new opportunity to bring a notice of claim. The court in Easy Roll-Off rejected that based on the purposes of the statute. Before they even got to the purposes of the statute, they pointed out that the plaintiff there has offered no rule or case law in this state that allowed the continuing violation type theory to be brought into the 893.80 world.
But the court didn't apply that continuing violation theory in the context of a contract because they said it was the contract that gave rise to the claim. It wasn't the payment of the tipping fee each time. I mean, to go back to, I think it was Justice Bradley who said, the other Justice Bradley, who said, you know, we could have Joan Baez type of concerts being played, and maybe that would disturb some of the people in the condo association. But a new event could certainly occur if the village brought in Rage Against the Machine, as one example, right?
There was certainly a contract, again, in Easy Roll-Off, but the plaintiffs stated every time they paid more money, that was their new cause of action under the antitrust laws involving restraint of trade. And so when you look at what that meant in terms of a restraint of trade and unreasonable conduct for every single day that they paid more, it's not unlike what the Yacht Club is arguing here, that whenever we hear an unreasonable, allegedly unreasonable concert, loud concert, we get a new clock or a new opportunity to file a notice of claim.
But qualitatively, the concerts are very different. The tipping fee is the tipping fee. Each time it's kind of the same thing. But the situations are so different, Council. Can't you? You don't acknowledge that?
Not in terms of the qualitative theory, no. And the reasoning, no. There's no difference. Here we don't have any specificity in this complaint as to what these loud music acts are. It is simply a conclusory allegation that we have loud music. They're not suing over a particular concert with particular allegations for that particular evening. It's a conclusory allegation that we have several concerts and they're all very loud. Well, what does that mean? You're right. On remand, we might be learning a lot of different things about their case, but not right now. The village position is quite simple, that that this court should follow the reasoning and easy roll-off, that it would be very difficult for governmental entities to budget for potential litigation if we are inviting repeat notice of claims for a continuing type injury. The court said that the legislature did not intend for governmental bodies to be exposed to indefinite periods of liability. In footnote number 16, it said that the manifest intent of the legislature was not to expose governmental entities to potentially infinite periods of liability. In our briefing, we pointed to this court's decision in Anderson that talks about the fact that it is the legislative's prerogative to create a framework and structure to treat municipal governments differently when it comes to liability exposure, whether that's the caps, whether that's immunity, or whether that's creating a notice of claim regime. And this court recognized all of that by its rulings in easy roll-off. You're right, there's absolutely no dispute in this case that the notice of claim statute applies. They agree. They agree that easy roll-off is good law. They agree with the salutary purposes of 893.80. They agree that they're well beyond the time to file their notice of claim unless, upon remand, they can show actual notice and lack of prejudice. They agree, too, that this is sporadic events. I mean, that's about all we know from the complaint. This is sporadic events. This is not year-round concerts. This is sporadic events. And we also know that things began sometime in 2014. And certainly when we look at their brief in opposition to the original motion to dismiss, they had some assertions in there that they knew about things in September 2015 and began to be aware of this. So no matter how you spin it, they're late, and this court needs not to follow easy roll-off to conclude that it is untimely unless they can show actual notice and prejudice. With that, we would respectfully request that this court affirm the Court of Appeals' decision remanding the case back to the Circuit Court.
Just a couple of just a couple of points, Your Honors, to address the argument of my opponent.
I don't want to keep you from that. I have, a fundamental question of what's the nature of your claim. Specifically, are you asserting that the continuing nuisance doctrine allows you to a new event, that is an injury-causing event, every concert, every Wednesday, apparently, or only on certain concerts that you deem unreasonably loud so that it deprives you of your property interests?
The latter, Your Honor.
Okay, so continuous nuisance does not mean continuous. It doesn't mean every concert. Is that what your position is?
Correct. The association and its members want the right to assert claims for relief for those concerts that rise to the level of disturbing the quiet enjoyment of their property. That is, that rise to the level of a nuisance in their view. I know that I have the burden of proof to convince a jury of that. But that's what I want to have. I want that opportunity.
The reason in part that I ask is nuisance law is, as indicated by your opposing counsel, a really amorphous concept in many ways.
One case that comes to mind is a case that was pled in nuisance because the overhanging limbs obscured the view of a stop sign. That was pled in nuisance. Growing up in negligence law, I've seen lots of cases. In fact, I would represent municipalities on some stop sign cases. And generally, that's pled in negligence. They failed to maintain that kind of thing there, and failed a number of things. But this particular case I'm thinking of that we had before the court years ago was the same kind of facts, but it was captioned in nuisance law. Now, my concern is importing into the notice of claim, exactly the concern raised by your opposing counsel, this amorphous concept that's really manipulatable so that what normally would be a negligence claim can be captioned as a nuisance instead and then allow for a notice of claim on a continuing nuisance. Certainly the overhanging of those limbs would be every day continuously, as opposed to what apparently you are asking, that continuous isn't the same thing. Continuous is not continuous. It is only when it's loud enough to cause problems. So help me with this.
Okay,
I'll
try to help you, Your Honor.
Yeah.
With respect to the issue at the stop sign, it must have been a great lawyer if they got that case past the motion stage on a nuisance claim, because nuisance, in my mind, is the invasion of your property rights through some use of a competing landowner. It can be sound or soot or odors or smoke. Water, sewage, all the things that we know from our nuisance cases where this court has applied the notice of claim statute very comfortably with nuisance claims. That was about what Bosco was all about. The issue about the fitting together of the nuisance law, well, it's not that I'm dreaming up anything. I'm just reading what the case law says. And Cull says what it says, and Justice Kelly hit it right on the nose, that each new nuisance is a new event. And that's what the Sunnyside case, where the specific discussion about what a continuous nuisance is, they term it in the sense that it can be abated. And certainly in this case, as I'm suggesting, the non-monetary remedy of turning the sound down abates the nuisance. It's not very difficult in my view. But what I wanted to do is just, in terms of this easy roll-off case, just to highlight the differences between that case and the present case. And really, you only have to look at the type of the interest involved here. In this case, the association are condominium owners, and they have the right to the quiet enjoyment of their property. It's a property right that's personal. In the easy roll-off case, it was just about money. In this case, the wrongful conduct alleged is a nuisance through the operation of a pavilion with very loud music. In the easy roll-off case, we had an allegation of anti-competitive behavior, commercial. In this case, the basis of claim is common law property claims. In the easy roll-off case, the basis of the claim was a contract and a statute that prohibits anti-competitive behavior. In this case, who controls the conduct? The village. In that case, who controlled the conduct? Easy roll-off by tipping. In this case, who controls whether an event occurs? The village. In that case, who controlled whether an event occurred? Easy roll-off. In this case, what is the primary remedy sought? It's equitable, it's forward-looking, and it's to stop future invasions. In the easy roll-off case, it was legal, it was monetary, and it was backward-looking, to recover past damages. So I think with all of those differences, it makes it very clear that notwithstanding my opponent's attempt to equate the types of unreasonable conduct to show that the cases are similar, all of those more fundamental reasons show how different easy roll-off is and why the circuit court was wrong and the Court of Appeals was wrong to apply easy roll-off to this nuisance case.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for a very interesting argument. Nuisance cases are always interesting. They always have wrinkles that are very much fact-specific to the case that's before the court. We are going to adjourn now as a court, and we have a 1:30 argument, so the justices will be gone between now and then, but I will be here. So all of you students who can stay, please do. And I think maybe some other students may be joining us who were here this morning at the first argument. We are adjourned.